This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Greetings to you, sweet children of Osiris.
I gotta address something right now, and it's a little uncomfortable, but I gotta say it. I'm being harassed by record labels, and you guys need to lay off. Every single major record label has been contacting me, offering me multi-million dollar deals, and my assistant doesn't have time to deal with your constant offers and gifts and the many things you've been sending us. Thank you, but no thank you. I get it. I'm a talented musician. And if I knew I was going to get harassed by record labels, I would never have played this song when I opened for Paul Simon at the Hollywood Bowl.
I can play guitar chords.
That was a cover of Taylor Swift's I Can Play Guitar Chords, which is from her new album 9891, which is basically her just singing John Mayer songs backwards. The original John Mayer song goes more like,
chords, guitar play, can I?
Record labels, I really appreciate your enthusiasm, but right now I'm just doing private modular synth noise shows for my four dogs, Piper, Palmer, Gatsby, and Fox. I've learned to make any sound I wish on these beautiful machines. I did not heed the admonishment of my music teacher, who told me you will never be able to make the sound of a spaceship traveling at light speed, ejecting a bubbling plasmatic beast into a tuba being sucked into a black hole. Here's my answer to you, Mr. Smith. Hopefully you can download podcasts in hell. I present to you the sound of a plasmatic beast being shot out of a spaceship traveling at light speed into a tuba being sucked into a black hole.
What is written, brethren? I will smite the shadow.
Unless you come
short
of this yesterday
before that thou shalt thrice deny the... Oh, shit. Damn it. Shit. Sorry. Still learning these things. That was not a recently plasmated bubbling beast being shot out of a spaceship traveling at light speed into a tuba being sucked into a black hole. That was the sound of Jesus telling Peter that he was going to say he didn't know him. The denial of Christ is a thing we all do when instead of expressing love or saying that we're happy or putting out into the universe some sweetness or forgiveness or grace or compassion or mercy, we choose to be sullen or unhappy or angry, usually not because we fear arrest, but because we're trying to impress our coolest, most miserable friends by mirroring their confusion. All right. It's like two knobs to the left, I think, and a couple of switches, and I can get that sound of that beast getting shot into that fucking tuba, into that black hole thing. And as I get this synth warmed up, put a couple more coals into the tenuverters. And guys, don't get my musical ability confused with natural talent. Sure, when you hear that kind of singing and guitar playing that you just heard, you might think, I could never be that good. That's like insane. That's just talent. That's some kind of genetic thing. No, that's years and years and years, literally 27 years of practice to learn how to play those two chords. Don't let anyone stand in the way of your dreams. Okay. Dial that in. Okay. There you go. Almost. I just spin this attenuverter. And that is how it's done, friends. An identical sonic representation of a sound we all have become so incredibly familiar with in these days of unregulated spaceship ejections. Let me just reiterate something. That was not the, a recording of the actual sound. That was completely done with synthesizers. So this can be done. You can learn to do these things. It takes years and years and years of practice, but don't let anybody stand in your way. My sweet loves, we have got a glorious podcast for you today with Daniele Bellelli. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some very quick business. Look at that man's rotten mouth. All his teeth are falling out. Little drops of blood because his gums are bleeding. Did someone open a coffin? Or is that man breathing? He should have used Quip. He should have used Quip. Quip, it's an electronic toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. You're probably brushing your teeth wrong. You don't just shove that old pea-covered, bristled, yellowed thing you found in the weeds in your mouth and think you've got a clean mouth. There's an actual technique, Quip. It'll show you how to do it. It vibrates when it's time to shift over to different quadrants of your mouth, and it starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/DTFH right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/DTFH. It's spelled GETQUIP.com/DTFH. Why is mommy with another man? Drinking wine and wearing lace. Well, my child, she's with another man. Cause I didn't use Squarespace. Went on Craigslist and I hired a webman, and he took away all our green. Now we're eating cold blown eye while your mom humps Charlie Sheen. I wish I used Squarespace. I should've used Squarespace. I didn't use Squarespace. And now we are alone forever, cursed for eternity. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Head to Squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain name. I don't need to tell you that Squarespace is the ultimate web design service on the internet. At Squarespace, you can turn your cool idea into a new website. You can showcase your work. You can blog or publish content, promote your business. I always say it, and I always will say it, I know somebody who sells their socks online. And if you can sell your socks online these days, then that means there's a lot of opportunity out there for the entrepreneur in today's economy. Squarespace helps you do this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, the ability to customize look, feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks, and it's optimized for mobile right out of the box. That means it sizes to any phone. It just works. That's the main thing. Make it. It's time for you to make it yourself. Create a website by yourself and make it stand out. Squarespace. I use Squarespace.com. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, that is a Squarespace website. And that means every time I upload an episode, I got to go over there and upload an image and put in all the data and put in the Amazon link and everything. And it is a flawless system that I love using. So if you're thinking about building a website and you don't want to end up with your beautiful child looking up at you, questioning why you made such a rotten decision to pay thousands of dollars to some lunatic, gas-huffing, pseudo-web designer when you could have just made it yourself, then head over to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain name. Do you like the DTFH? Do you want to dive deeper into the undergunt of the DTFH? You want to go swimming down into the Marianas Trench of the DTFH where Atlantis lies? Then all you have to do is go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. You'll get access to our Discord server where many of us, including me, hang out and chat. And you also have access to an hour-long rambling thing that I'm too embarrassed to put on the main feed once a month. As well as anytime I do an interview with my guests, I upload it there before it hits the main feed. That's patreon.com/DTFH. And as always, a deep thank you to those of you who continue to use our mysterious Amazon link. I think you've got to have your pop-ups turned off, and it's probably way more of a freaking hassle than you feel like it. But if you wanted to buy like a modular synth, if you're listening to the weird sounds you heard in some of the parts of the opening, get a Make Noise Morphogene. These things are freaking incredible, and I think they sell them on Amazon. Just go through the link. It's located in the comments section. If you scroll down of any episode over at duncantrussell.com. Okay, friends, without further ado, today's guest is one of our favorite guests here at the DTFH. He is a philosopher, an author, and an amazing podcaster who's got two glorious podcasts, The Drunken Taoist and History on Fire. All the links you need to get to him will be at duncantrussell.com. Now everybody, please prepare to have your pineal glands smashed open by today's guest, a true messenger of the light, a warrior of truth, and an amazing human, Daniele Bolelli. Mr. Bolelli, welcome to the DTFH. We're going to do a joint podcast here. So I guess this is also an episode of the Drunken Taoist.
Yes, huh? Man. Let's make it happen. How many times by now? We have had so many podcasts together. This is fun.
So many.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so great. And we've become like recorded friends. Our friendship totally. Is mostly recorded. We've had more recorded conversations
than
we've had unrecorded conversations.
That is a fact.
We live in a kind of Orwellian, we've put ourselves in an Orwellian police state where we record everything that we say.
I know, and where we meet up and we start chatting, that is like, oh, that's great. Wait, stop, shut up. Let me press the mic. Okay, let's go.
Now, record.
Record, otherwise record. It's not a real conversation.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? How much things these days are being recorded versus in the past. We're living in an age where every transaction, every movement, every conversation is probably being recorded, even though some people don't realize just how much they're being surveilled.
Leaves a mark. There's a presence of it somewhere that keeps living long after your conversation is done in the live version. It's still somewhere out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was looking up Alexa. I have an Amazon Echo.
Yeah.
And I found on a conspiracy website how you can check the history of your Amazon Echo and see all the things you've told it to do.
Yeah.
But not only that, it actually records random snippets of conversation accidentally.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. And you can listen. Since you've owned your Echo, you can go back
and check out all the different dialogues you've had. That's pretty wild.
Tiny little like snippets, you know, like weird moments, strange things happening at par. I didn't take the time to go through and listen to every single snippet because there's so many of them.
I'm sure.
But those snippets are not being held at your house inside the Echo. Those snippets are in the cloud.
They are flying somewhere out there. That, yeah, man, that's pretty trippy. You're, well, one thing that's different from any other generation in history is that so many of us will be in a position where your grandkids will have, if they are in the mood for it, they have hours and hours and hours of material to listen to you talk.
Yes.
Long after you're gone. And also when you are, you know, the old man on the mountain, they can still say, hey, I remember when you said that thing. That's pretty funny right there.
Well, and this actually produces what's going to become like one of the great like ethical problems of the future is like this, the problem we're having now. Like, so the recent thing that happened where people started taking down Civil War statues. Mm-hmm. These people were criminals.
Yeah, sure.
They're racists. We have to take down their statues. Let's wipe them from the history mm-hmm. books because we don't want to admit that we don't want to honor them with a sure. statue.
Right.
And so that's seems to be related to like an evolving consciousness mm-hmm. where people are that it's becoming less and less palatable. Not that it was ever really palatable, but it's just becoming an aberration. It's becoming...
I think in the past it was. It was kind of like, what do you mean you don't... You're not for slavery? What the hell is wrong with you? Can you believe that our neighbor is not pro-slavery?
Right.
Fuck that guy. Yeah, right. We're not having him for dinner no more.
Right. So if you listen to some people, if your ancestors did have a podcast, some of the conversations in the podcast might very naturally be talking about like, slave problems.
Yeah, you know, these damn slaves are not doing their work.
Yeah.
Can you believe how much... Last week, my shoulder popped up because I was whipping this damn lazy slave over and over.
They wouldn't be saying slave.
Like, right. What?
But they'd be saying the great reviled word that used to be right. just a very common word. And it would be... You would... Potentially, there would be like... podcasts based on ways to like keep
maximize the work output you can get out of your slaves.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you'd listen to that, your ancestors, and you would like probably be horrified
yep.
by what they were saying, and what they were saying in a nonchalant way, because they were on some level completely unaware that what they were doing was fucked up.
Yeah, because to them it made perfect sense.
Right.
What do you mean you don't whip your slaves? What's wrong with you?
Right.
Don't you know they get all weird and uppity if you don't whip them sometime?
So, theoretically, now, some of the things that we've talked about mm-hmm. that to us seem absolutely normal could potentially, at some point in the future, be an abomination.
Sure.
I don't know what that might be. I mean, it could be something as simple as like, it could be something as simple as, I mean, I guess imagine like if there were podcasts during World War II in Germany mm-hmm. and there were some Nazis who had a podcast
yep.
or something like that. You know, they could be hung
yep.
for some of the things they're saying.
So, of course.
So that's the thing. That's the weird thing about these thumbprints that we're leaving behind of our lives is that we don't really know where this technology is going to go, and we don't know what the consciousness is going to be 50 years from now.
Yeah, because that's the funny thing. It's like everybody and their grandmother is convinced that everyone else was a product of their time, but I actually have gained all the experience from all this time, and my conclusions are actually just the correct ones. That they are not subject to time or place. They are correct in all times and places.
Yeah.
It's just everyone else was trapped in that strange game.
Yeah, that's right, right? Like, right, no, this is when we're waking up from the dream.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we're waking up from the dream of superstition. At this point, we're waking
yeah.
up from the primitive times.
Exactly.
Like, now we're we've done it. I mean, those times were fucking crazy, but these
yep.
times, no. Now we're really on the straight and narrow here.
Exactly. What was it, Jefferson Airplane song? The crown of creation. That idea, right? We all that shit that came before led to this moment, to us right now. We got it. This is the end point. You know.
That's it. Yeah.
So yeah, probably not, but.
I don't. I mean, this is why I just keep falling more and more in love with Buddhism, because mm-hmm. that is a philosophy that, to me, it transcends culture.
Mm-hmm.
And not only does it transcend culture, it infects culture that it uses cultural symbolism to try to convey a kind of unchanging, unwavering truth about human existence. You know, and I love that because it is that to me, that is real. There is something that is not, that as of yet has not changed. Now, could it change? Potentially, but as of yet, it hasn't changed, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, life is, to put it in a probably wrong way, I just had it explained to me in a different way, but life is suffering. Mm-hmm. But actually the term, I've just had this explained by David Nickturn, who's been teaching me meditation, the term is not so much suffering as much as life is kind of out of balance.
Sure.
Life is, a human life is kind of like, the way he put it is, it's like if you're maybe, I don't know, riding your car and mm-hmm. one of the wheels is a little flat.
Yeah.
It's wobbly. It's off a little bit. Human existence is a little wobbly.
That's interesting because the way I always look at that statement, I wasn't changing the suffering part. I was changing the verb that preceded. So rather than life is suffering, in my mind was like life inevitably involves a lot of suffering. Like there's no escaping it, right? That doesn't mean that all of life is suffering. It just means that there's a shitload of it out there and you are going to run into it.
Well, first of all, the thing is, it isn't even a life is suffering. It's dukkha mm-hmm. is what it's called. So right. it's not even like a bunch of words jammed together. Yeah. It's just like, we're wobbly here. Yeah. Like we go from one extreme to the next.
Right.
And we're kind of like, if you sort of really look at your life, you realize that it's just a little, it's either a little bumpy or a lot bumpy
right.
or like, but there's always just this kind of weird sense of like, you know, this doesn't quite mm-hmm. feel right.
Yeah.
You it doesn't really, something seems off a little bit here. And then that sort of gives birth to, a lot of activity for people, which is because when things don't feel quite right.
Yeah, you need to retweet. And I think that's the metaphor for Buddhism that I always heard that was always interesting is Buddha as a physician, as a doctor. So first he's prescribing, you know, what is the problem? Okay,
right.
There's the idea of dukkha. There's something is off, right?
Yeah.
There's something is not quite right that we need to... is there a way to fix it? Yes, there is a way to fix. Like, what causes this problem? And then he goes into, you know, the attachment to desire. Okay, we got that. Is there a way to fix it? Yes, there is. And now I'm going to lay out the Eightfold Path with step-by-step instruction for how you go about fixing
it. Yeah, that's it.
And so it's very pragmatic, you know, it's principle-driven. So it's not as subject to time and place because it's just laying out a methodology for how you solve problems.
Yeah, and it's not faith-based.
No.
Another super important part of it to me is it has nothing to do with faith. It's not like you don't just pretend to believe. If you're pretending to believe in the shit, you're not looking at it at all on any level.
And I think that's a huge difference between a lot of Eastern stuff, particularly Taoism and Buddhism, versus a lot of Western stuff, is that a lot of the Western stuff is faith-based. You know,
yes.
whether something, you need to believe certain things in order to be. Whereas a lot of those traditions, faith is, whether you believe it or not, doesn't matter. You know, the universe is the way it is, whether you believe in those principles or not, completely secondary. It doesn't really matter in anybody, because those things remain true one way or another.
Right.
Whether Jesus was resurrected is a pretty big fucking deal in Christianity. If it's not, then the whole structure of Christianity starts crumbling down. Whether Buddha really lived, really said the thing that are attributed to him or not, it doesn't really matter. It's more like, what are those ideas? How can they be applied? Do they work? You tried. It's in some ways almost more scientific as an approach.
It's like whoever invented the Macarena.
When I hear that, okay.
If like the idea is like, if like we find out that you guys, you know what? Like we thought the Macarena was created by Gustav Fonks in 1983.
Right.
When he was drunk out of his fucking mind on margaritas and doing big fat rails of Colombian blow. And he came up with this dance that somehow like caught on. And then you find out that's not true.
Right.
We don't know who invented the Macarena. There's still the Macarena. It still exists. The dance steps are still there. There is still this kind of dance. It doesn't matter. It's still there. So in Buddhism, it's kind of like the Macarena in the sense that, you know, I don't know. Like Siddhartha Gautama, was it or not? I don't know. It probably was real. He probably did exist.
Probably.
But even Buddha would be like, don't worry about me.
Yeah.
It's not about me.
Exactly.
And
Right now, by the way, I'm picturing Buddha doing the Macarena. That's, I can see a successful TV show based on this premise.
So yeah, I love that, man, and that the beauty of that, and I think it becomes really very useful in a time period that we're in right now, mm-hmm. which is that the way humans are taking an assessment of their environment is no longer based on walking outside and looking around,
yeah.
but is now based on staying inside, not looking out your window, but looking out the window of your computer
yep.
onto social media. Mm-hmm. And from that, you sort of come up with an assessment of the world.
Yeah, and that's another trip right there, right? Because the whole social media thing, on some way, this shit is awesome. Because it's like, think about when we were growing up, where if you had any interest in, let's say, Buddhism, and then you go to the local bookstore, and if you find two books on Buddhism, no matter how crappy they were, you'd be super excited, because that's all the information you have access to. Today, you can type anything into the magic box, and anything you want about it pops up. So it's awesome. You know, we have access to information yeah. in a way we never had before.
Yeah.
On the other hand, of course, it's like any invention, there are the problems that come with it. It's like, you know, just because you have fire, yeah, fire is great to cook your meal, but it can also burn down your house. And social media works the same way. You know, there's a way in which internet and all of that is amazing, and it does beautiful things for us. And clearly there are ways to use it to fuck up your life. And that unless you know how to play with it, the dangers are there as much as the opportunities.
That's a great way to put it, you know, because it's sort of like, at least with fire, mm-hmm. when you get burnt from fire, there it's noticeable.
Yeah.
It happens instantly.
Yeah.
You know you've been burnt by fire. I would say the social media could be more like asbestos, mm-hmm. you know? It's like
right, you don't know it's there. Right?
Yeah, you don't realize you've been infected yeah. with some of the poisons of the thing until you're sort of like up at like 3 a.m., looking at Twitter and living, probably if you live in the United States, you know, or in most countries, unless you're in Syria or some of the like really dark parts of the world, right? If you've got electricity
yeah.
and you're looking at your computer and you have a computer or a phone and you have some shelter and you have some food, then you're doing better mm-hmm. than a lot of people probably, and that's certainly better than a lot of people in the past have been. You're doing great. You're doing great. Also, if you can stand up and walk around, you can like look at the stuff. And yet, and that's, you know, the I'm imagining many people are like, they're doing okay. It's not great. It's not the best of the best. It's not sure. the worst of the worst. It's just okay. But you can look at social media and start seeing strong opinions. People will tell you, people who seem to have really strong opinions mm-hmm. and seem to be really like authorities on this thing or that thing
yeah.
will assure you that, yeah, this is bad. Like we're on the brink of some bad thing, and this is a bad thing, and it's bad, and this is really bad.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And you're looking at it and you're thinking like, fuck, man, maybe it is bad. And then you start looking at the people who are agreeing with the person who's mm-hmm. like, yeah, that is bad. And then you start maybe following them, and the next thing you know, everything's on the screen is bad.
Totally.
But it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the problems of the human mind, that a lot of humans feed on fear, because, you know, fear is the kind of thing, warning, danger is out there. That's
yeah.
the kind of stuff that kept you alive, right? It's the kind of stuff that, hey, pay attention, because there's this thing that if you don't pay attention, this saber-toothed tiger is going to eat you. So, you know, be out for the signs that there's a saber-toothed tiger in this territory. And then you can avoid getting killed. That's useful, right? That's the kind of mild paranoia that's useful. But then there's 10,000 ways in which today that setup just fuck us up, because rather than just being, I have my eyes to look out for anything that can mess up with my current life that's working okay, suddenly you start, that's all you look for. And so your life is not even no longer okay, because all you do is look at all the things that are going to fuck it up.
Right.
And it's like a comet is going to strike and a revolution that's going to throw us in jail and take away our guns. And then it's going to be the thing that, and it's like this fear, and the media, of course, knows that that's how human beings are. So if you have a network, you know that before a commercial break, you throw fear, be very afraid. We're going to tell you how to protect yourself after the commercial break. Because you know that that's going to hook people. You know that that's going to keep them there watching until...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like people who figured out how to get rich off of yelling that the theater's on fire.
Absolutely.
And where it gets even more dismaying is when you realize, like, now we have a new currency, right? So we have a new currency, and the currency is retweets and likes, mm-hmm. or whatever validation you're getting through social media, right? So this is a new currency. Followers, retweets, and likes. It's a currency.
Yep.
And so these people who are on Twitter blasting out infinite tweets about mm-hmm. how rotten the world is, or how terrified they are, or how we should be mm-hmm. terrified, are getting like incredible validation for it.
Yep.
And so they're actually unaware, probably, of the fact that they're doing the exact same thing the media is doing, which is capitalizing off of frightening people.
Absolutely. And I think it becomes a weird game, because you said the key word right there, where they probably are not aware of it. Because here is the thing, is maybe you have 10 things you want to say, and two are about, hey, let's worry about these things, that we should worry about these people or these ideas or this event or something that we need to consider. And you get like 500 times more response on that topic than on another topic.
That's
that
it.
Maybe is more creative, more this, but is that's the easy sell that catches everybody. So the next time you put out something greater than 2 out of 10 is 5 out of 10. And those 5 are the ones that again hit the most.
Yeah.
And the next time is 8. And before you know it, that's all, that becomes your shtick.
Yeah.
That's all you do is, because you got the message that that's how you're going to get the love and the attention and in some cases the money, because that's the reality of it, right? A lot of people start making bank on that kind of feeding that to a certain audience. And it's, I think that's why to me, one of my ground rules for listening to anybody is how much are they giving me that's helping the quality of my life?
Right.
Not how right they are, not how smart they are, not what a good speech they can put together is. What are they giving me? And usually that means something creative, something positive, something inspiring.
Yeah.
That can help me make life better. If there's enough of that, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm tuned in. But if it's just, he's smart in analyzing the problem that's out there. Yeah, I don't need to listen to 50 hours of that. You know, it's like, 20 minutes quick, get a sense of what they are talking about is plenty. I think it's a conscious decision, because otherwise my brain is the same monkey brain as everybody else, right? It's like I will gravitate toward fear, I will gravitate toward all those things. So I need to make a conscious decision of what am I feeding myself here? You know, what is this thing? This is about getting peace at that other group, because there's always some other group to get peace to it. It's about fear, it's about worries, about the end of Western civilization as we know it, unless we do this. And it's like, fuck that. I don't want to feed myself with that stuff. I wanna feed my brain with stuff that makes me laugh, that makes me happy, that makes me feel more at ease. And that interests me more. And
also, you know what interests me? World peace. Is it possible?
Mm-hmm.
Can it happen? And how would it happen? And what are things, like, if you think about, like, what are things that are leading to more conflict, and mm-hmm. what are things that seem to be sort of reducing conflict?
Yeah.
What are these things? What do they look like? What are the steps? Is it possible? And then, like, taking this grand notion of, like, mm-hmm. like skipping all the things in between, but imagining a world
mm-hmm.
at some point where there isn't a war happening.
Yeah.
There may be some skirmishes here or there, some things like rotten things here and there, but there isn't like a huge, like there isn't really war. There isn't like that is like kind of like gone off the table. Like the way that people now react to racism,
mm-hmm.
people begin to react that way to war.
Yeah.
So that if a president, if a politician, if any person seems to even remotely vocalize about war being an actual legitimate solution to a geopolitical problem, they're instantly fired.
Of course.
Now, I don't know how we get there.
Right.
But, like, I imagine a world like that, in a world where, like, economies are interconnected and a world where people are like overcoming their paranoia and fear about other cultures, mm-hmm. and fear about like what, I don't know. It's, you know, I think it's possible,
yep.
but like to get there, I don't know how to get there, but if we all put our heads together with this interconnectedness that's happening and manifesting through the internet, I think we can really do it.
I agree. And I think that's where it's interesting is those are challenges, right? A, because it's harder. It's very easy to bitch and complain about somebody. Not so easy to come up with creative solutions. But at the same time, because it's a cool challenge, it's a worthy challenge, it's a challenge that actually is stimulating. It's not this sit back, point the finger and say, oh, it's yeah. all the fault of the bad guys. It's, yeah, I don't give a fuck about the bad guys. Tell me who the good guys are. Tell me why you are a good guy and what do you do about it that
right.
helps other people, that helps yourself, that helps... That becomes, and it's not an asshole question like, oh, how good are you kind of thing. No, right. it's like literally, what's the best that we can put forward? What's the best that you can put forward? And even if you don't have the answer right now, that's fine. But let's make that a priority.
Yeah.
You know, let's think about how would we answer that question in the best possible way.
That's
dedicate,
it.
You know, you want to, once in a while, you have to vent and bitch. I get it. 10% of the time, 20 at most. But make sure that 80 is going in another direction, you know, that's going in the direction of how to build a better relationship with your own physicality, with your body, with a sense of community, with a sense of how you create better communication with other human beings, how you do all those things. That's yes. where it's fascinating.
That is exactly where, to me, mm-hmm. the rubber hits the road. And in the first, I think one of the things that like is a fun thing that anyone can do is imagine here's a fantasy. Imagine this. There is actually a decentralized, nonviolent revolution happening right now. It's happening. We are in the middle, probably by now, of a really well planned out series of political actions mm-hmm. that are leading to what could be a global renaissance. Mm-hmm. And what those actions are is the end of prohibition on psychedelics, the legalization of marijuana, which you see happening all over the yep. planet. Because with the legalization of marijuana, that doesn't just mean like a lot of people who shouldn't be arrested don't get arrested. It means that human consciousness begins to merge with nature at ever increasing rates because of access to a psychoactive chemical that allows this kind of communion to happen mm-hmm. with the planet. So we don't even know like what that plan is going to be teaching people in mass.
Yep.
But India just legalized it. Canada just legalized it. Congress is trying to pass some kind of federal legalization for medical marijuana. And apparently Trump is going to sign off on it if they pass it, because he fucking hates Jeff Sessions and Jeff Sessions doesn't want marijuana to be legal.
And he put it in place. That was hilarious. It's like, he hates Jeff Sessions. You put him there, not somebody else.
I know.
That was hilarious.
And it's, I mean, to me, it's like, oh my God, this is like, it couldn't be better. Like crazy fucking Trump
yeah.
hates this like person who's like, to me, a billion times worse than fucking Trump.
Right.
And this, and that, which means that Trump is just going to start doing shit to fuck with yeah. Jeff Sessions.
Of course.
Whether Trump cares about marijuana or not, I don't know.
Secondary, who cares?
Secondary. Yeah. But he's like, oh my God, I can just fuck with him all day long. That's what does funny. Jeff Sessions not want to happen? I'm going to do it. And if Trump just does the opposite of what Jeff Sessions wants,
yeah.
we really might have world peace within right. the next 3 years. Just to piss someone off.
That's
Trump,
awesome.
Trump might instigate world peace just to piss off Jeff Sessions, which to me is super funny.
Oh, that is funny.
Super funny. So we have all of these things that are happening that are clearly like moving us into a world that is less violent, more open-minded, mm-hmm. more connected. It's happening. So the fantasy is, imagine that there is a decentralized, nonviolent revolution happening and you're part of it. And the moment you decide to be a part of it, you become a soldier in this
right.
movement that's happening. You become an actor in this incredible secret revolution that's happening. And it's a fun game you can play with yourself. And It's like you can actually sort of instigate a state of pronoia. Have you ever heard of this before?
Yeah, remind me one second. I remember the word, but...
So pronoia is the fantasy that the universe is conspiring to help you.
Oh, yeah. So, that's what it was.
Yeah, so there's a story about a psychiatrist who... or a psychologist who wanted to see if he could make himself paranoid. So he started walking around, imagining, just pretending people were watching him and following him. And then he like had a, like, a, I think he had a, like a psychotic break because he started really believing it. It went from being like, oh my God, I'm going to pretend people are following me, to like, fuck, I was right.
Yeah.
They are. Holy shit. I'm being gang stalked.
Yeah.
So you could do the opposite of that to yourself.
Right.
And start imagining that, like, you know, this is the great fantasy or the lens to look through. There is a non-violent, decentralized revolution happening. It's in the same way empire evolves, revolution has evolved, to the point where the revolutionaries have realized, oh, we can't have leaders. Like, yeah. Leaders, we get fucked up. In fact, we can't really even have, like, cells operating together. It's better for most people to, like, sort of just be, like, agents acting in completely in the dark. But if you just imagine that's what you are, the moment you, the steps are this: one, pretend it's true.
Yeah.
Two, imagine you've just been activated by this podcast. And three, wait for orders to come. And then before you know it, you will get a synchronicity. You will get the weirdest fucking thing, or just in your mind, suddenly something will pop into your head about what you could do to help this great movement that's gonna end in like a renaissance and global peace. That thing could be like, oh shit, I need to like go like, you know what, my neighbor is broke and needs food, or there's something to do. It'll just come to you.
Yeah.
And then what happens as you continue this ridiculous pronoid fantasy is that you just play this game with yourself for a little while, and sure as fucking shit, people will start coming out of the woodwork and they will help you for real. And they'll start telling you things and you'll be like, wait, what? Wait, what? Wait a minute. Wait, no. How is that happening? Yeah. How do they know? What is this? And now you start living in this beautiful pronoid world where you are being like buffeted by the winds of some very sophisticated, organized, decentralized, nonviolent revolution. It's a blast. I highly recommend playing that game with yourself.
I can hear John Lennon playing in the background to all of this. It's some very imagined. So it's
yeah. But it's just try. I mean, I challenge you. Try it for a week and see where you're at.
It's
at the
better
end of the
than
week.
Alternative, right? It's better than thinking that everything in the universe is conspiring to fuck you up and make life miserable. Because I mean, to a large degree, is, you know, I'm a big believer in being real, but at the same time, there is an element to how you choose to perceive things that will affect how you relate to them and how things around you happen. Now,
that's
of
right.
course, you know, like, I think that one of the things that sometimes piss me off is when people skip a step. So there's the something horrible happened and it's always like, ah, but you need to look how this is for the best. And it's kind of like, shut up, something horrible just happened. You know, this is not for the best. This sucks, right? But to me, it's like, here is the problem. You either have the people who become complete deniers of the unpleasant sides of reality, and they only want to, because it's like, otherwise it ruins their happy fantasy, and otherwise I'm going to have to deal with the fact that there are harsh things in life. Or you find the people who get stuck there and dwell there forever about how life is rough and terrible and hard and this and that. And it's like, to me, it's like, let's be real. When bad shit happens, and this bad shit, and there's no spinning it in a cool way, it still is bad shit, let's acknowledge it and then figure out how we move on from here. You know, it's like, let's acknowledge, okay, this is shit. Having said that, continuing to say that this is shit is not going to help us very much, right?
Yeah.
So how about we figure out, regardless of whether it's fair or not, none of that shit matters. These are the cards that have been handed to you. We can agree that you probably didn't get the best cards, but who cares? These are the cards that are in your hand. How are you going to play them? Because that's really the only thing that counts.
Yeah.
Is at this point, are you going to take those cards, good or bad as they may be? How can you play them in the best possible way?
Yeah, I like that. I like, wait, which is the, who's the Greek god that stole fire? What's his name?
Mr. Prometheus, I believe, is the name we're looking for.
Yeah, Prometheus. And he got in big trouble. What do they do? They like...
they chain him to a rock, and every day an eagle arrives to eat his liver.
Yeah.
And then during the night, his liver grow again.
Yeah.
And the next day, the eagle come back and eat his liver again.
Yeah. And he like, but isn't the idea that through the whole thing he laughs at the gods? Like Prometheus is, maybe this is just like some existentialist take on it.
I like that, but yeah, I haven't heard it.
The idea is that Prometheus is like, even in the midst of this, Prometheus is like, yeah,
can find a way.
Still got the fire, still gave the fire to people, motherfuckers. And I don't have to be freaked out by this never ending torture by your dumbass eagle eating my fucking liver. P.S. I've gotten used to it. P.S. I think it's funny. P.S. I'm friends with the eagle. P.S. I'm glad he's eating my liver because he's hungry. He's awesome. I've named him William. His name's William. I look forward to him flying down. And so then suddenly you realize, like, this is the power of being a human.
Right.
Is that if we take, like, so if we're to look at, like, what you're talking about, mm-hmm. like, no doubt there are, every day, horrible, 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 inconceivably horrible fucking things happen. And,
yeah.
But, you know, if we mythologize it and use Prometheus as an example, you can, in the midst of this horrible thing, still find mm-hmm. a place of equanimity, peace, tranquility, and power. And this is to be a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find that place in it where even in the midst of this,
yep.
you're still smiling at the world. This is the human power. This is the human potential. And this is like, if we do that, you know, what is it people say? Speak truth to power.
Mm-hmm.
Speak truth to power. Do that. But do it with a smile.
Yeah, that's important. Because otherwise you're spending your life thinking that until the day when utopia materializes, you have to grind your teeth and fight on and it's going to be rough. And it's like, well, you're going to wait a long time because that may or may not happen anytime soon. But having fun while you're fighting the good fight, that's where it's like one of my favorite sentences of all times is my sex-loving Zen monk from the 1400s, Ikkyu Sojun, who said, throw me into hell and I'll find a way to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I love that, right? Because it's not denying hell is hell. It's like, it sucks. It is what it is, right? I'll find a way to enjoy it. It's like, regardless of what the objective reality out there is, I'm going to figure out a way to make it better than if I just go in thinking, oh, look how objectively it's terrible. There is such thing as objectivity. There's also the way in which you relate to it. And that's a choice. That's not just, it's not dictated by the facts. The facts limit what you can and cannot do. Some people are going to have an easier or harder time, but your choice is a key one.
That's right. And the first thing they want is to colonize your brain with fear.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And by them, I mean, it's like, okay, so basically what we have going on here is essentially two competing paradigms. We have one paradigm is the paradigm of fear, disaster, terror, the amygdala people. They're like,
yep.
And within that paradigm, you have two different, I think you could break it into two big categories. One category is the people who are profiting off of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just the weapons manufacturers. This is the media.
Yep.
This is people selling like anti-anxiety medications. This is the people who have like come up with like bullshit, hyper expensive ways to like overcome it by going to like, I don't know. This is there's like
yeah, there's a whole industry.
There's a huge industry in scaring people.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, it was really funny. I wanted to take a screenshot, but I think CNN realized how preposterous the headline was, so they took it down. But the headline was something along the lines of like, you know, the economy, the unemployment is lower than it's been in 50 years, but Americans are still uneasy. And it's like, I wonder why, CNN. I wonder fucking why. Because
right.
every single day, you're bugling the trumpets of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And now you're like, people seem to still be uneasy. Weird, huh? Huh, weird. That's weird, right? You're selling cars, motherfuckers. You're selling cars. You're selling ads. Trying to make money. I get it. You want to make a buck. But anyway, we have one paradigm. It's the people who are profiting off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not just those people who are profiting off of it with actual money, but the people who are profiting off of it with power.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are on social media, putting themselves forward as some kind of like champions of peace or champions of some kind of like, I don't know, some
sure.
kind of, but yet everything they say is a different breakdown of how rotten the world is.
Yep.
And so those people are profiting too. So that's the profiteers. And then we have the just people who are authentically terrified because they don't know what's happening because they've become confused. Their brains have been colonized. So those are the people I think that can truly be helped. So that's one paradigm. The other paradigm is all the peace workers in the world, all the people who are like truly trying to make a more peaceful, beautiful, collaborative, connected world where we figure out a way to have dialogue with each other and we figure out a way to like, there's gotta be a way. I know we can do this. So there's these two competing paradigms happening here. And I think to be a successful peace worker, you and the thing you're talking about, which is like, we can't just skip over this. We can't fake smile at the eagle and we can't fake smile at the gods. We have to figure out a way to actually find peace inside ourselves. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love Buddhism.
Right.
Because it's like it really has a method that cuts through whatever the particular political situation of the time period may be to get right to the crux of the issue, which is that to be a human being is to feel a little off balance, to feel a little off. And the reason we feel a little off is because of three fundamental problems, which is that we either have desire, we want this thing or that thing, we don't want something, which is actually kind of another form of desire. I desire this thing to not be happening, but that's called aversion. We don't want to be in the car in traffic. We don't want to be in our marriage. We don't want to be looking down at a fucking eagle's beak, nailing us in the stomach yet again and flying off with our fucking liver. We don't want that.
William.
What? Yeah, William. Oh, fuck. Here's William again, that fucking eagle.
Not today, William.
William, really? Like, it can't taste that good, right? And then the third one is just ignorance. We're ignorant, which kind of means we're not aware of the fact that we live in a universe of impermanence, or we're not aware of the fact that we're all completely interconnected. And so these are the three big problems. Uh-huh. Regardless of where you're at, the political situation, how much money you have, don't have, what you're doing, if you really look at your problem, those are the three main fucking problems. You either want to be somewhere else or want to have some shit you don't have, or you don't want to be where you're at, or you're just completely confused about what the place is in general.
Of course.
So we start dealing with those things first, and then you begin to like actually experiencing a kind of lightening of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that produces, I think, a state of consciousness where you can begin to like work with the world and maybe make changes. I don't know.
Speaking of which, you seem on a good wave. You seem like in a really good mood today, and your overall, I haven't seen you in a while, and your overall vibe seems pretty damn happy. I like that.
Thanks, man.
I like seeing that. Because, you know, it's like, I mean, you know it all too well. We all do. It's like there are those waves, right? There are the moments when we feel like this. And then sometimes there are the moments where it's like, fuck, it's hard. You know, it's like mild cycles of depression, or not so mild, that sometimes can kick in. But you seem to be, what do you think? Is this like a particular phase of the wave, or you're finding a way to be at a different place of balance in your life, or what's going
on? I got
on?
Lucky, man. I got this guy, David Nickturn. He's like a Chogyam Trungpa student who like is like just this incredible, you know. What happened is like I sort of decided to go a little deeper into studying Buddhism and meditation in particular. And so I started working with this guy, and like he's like a really talented teacher, and he sort of he sort of helped me like find some or figure out some shit that I had kind of like hadn't really fully grasped, at least like with my own mind. I'd like heard about it and read about it a million times, and so it's cool, man, when you start understanding the way your mind works, which is like kind sort of like, if you want to have a reason to meditate, I think the reason to meditate is because you want to help. That's a good reason to meditate. But to really help, we got to figure out a way to, as much as possible, like find some kind of equilibrium inside, right? So, you know, you start doing mindfulness practice and you start recognizing something that's really interesting, that is like, for me, is like incredibly interesting because I have known about it and I've experienced it in different ways, but the methodology of this particular lineage of Buddhism, the Kagyu lineage, mm-hmm. the Shambhala, the
yeah.
is like real non-woo-woo-y basic. Here's what you do. You take a seat, you follow your breath. When your mind wanders, you bring it back to your breath. That's it. It's really simple. It's simple.
Yeah.
But then you start becoming aware of how your fucking mind is working. At least, and it's really amazing. You start realizing, oh my God, that thing you just talked about, the wave,
mm-hmm.
you realize, oh shit, that fucking wave that I thought was like my life is actually happening on a cycle in my mind at every moment. And so yep. you start getting really familiar with this incredible thing that's happening, which is you're blinking in and out of reality. You're going from a state of being lost in your thoughts or sleepy or whatever, or caught in your body, but usually just in your thoughts, to back to your breath and in the present moment. And that's it. But you start realizing like, oh my God, I keep blinking in and out of reality. I'm like a firefly.
Yeah.
I'm like a interdimensional firefly that's going from the thought realm into the like human realm nonstop.
Of course.
Blinking in and out of reality all day long.
I'm here and now I'm back lost in my thoughts.
Yeah.
And what glimpse of reality back in my thoughts.
So what starts happening, or what I have found has happened, and one of the really cool things they say is like, look, whatever the fuck happened in your past meditation and whatever you think the thing is you had, don't be attached to that either.
Right.
Because that's the same bullshit. Because now instead of blinking in and out of like some other past experience, now you're blinking in and out of thinking about meditate.
Of course.
It's the same. So that being said, there was a kind of spaciousness that can start happening when you're doing a sitting meditation that you didn't even, or I didn't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, when it's working for me, the feeling reminds me of like a dolphin that got let out of a aquarium,
mm-hmm.
and is suddenly dealing with the fact that like there's an entire ocean and you've been swimming around this yeah. little aquarium
yeah.
that you thought was you.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is a big relief, man. And
check you out.
That makes you happy.
I bet. You show it. Let's put it that way.
That's great. Well, it's also I'm wearing a new Buddhist cologne.
Fuck all the other stuff you said. That's the answer.
Scent of awakening.
Yes.
Yeah. It's my own personal brand, guys. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, you can, for only $25.99, you can no longer be afraid and feel free like the dolphin.
Yes. Scent of awakening. That's the way to do it. How about, I remember like sometimes speaking of cycles, you were talking about working out like a madman, then you fall off, then you go back in again. Where are you at in terms of relationship with the body?
Not great, man. Not great. I went to the gym like a week and a half ago, and it felt fucking great. And I didn't go. And this is the other thing I love about this guy, Nick Turn. He's so cool, man. And the way he teaches is he's like, a lot of us ask this question, which is, I know it feels good to work out, but I don't. Or I know when mm-hmm. I meditate, my life tends to get better, but I don't do it. Why don't I do it?
Yeah.
And what he was saying in this class is, you know, like we're always trying to find some kind of mystical answer to that question, you know? And he's like, it's probably laziness.
Right. It goes back to old-fashioned laziness. Right?
It's not some kind of fucking like, that's what I love about it. It's not like some, I would love to believe.
Yeah.
That the reason I don't do it is because of, you know, I don't know, like I don't meditate. You know, I don't meditate because I'm afraid of my own awakening. No.
Interdimensional demons are struggling with you, trying to hold you back.
No.
Because they know that the world is never going to be the same when Duncan Trussell becomes enlightened and gets a six-pack.
I'm lazy.
Right.
I like to play God of War.
Yeah.
It's like there's not a... That's what I really love about this particular lineage is it's not bullshit. It's just right. Like, you're probably lazy.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I would much rather someone tell me, oh no, you're lazy, than it's some fucking confounding sure. complex thing. So, but I know. So that's like, I'm, you know, certainly something that is always floating in my consciousness is that, man, come on, dude, let's get back to the gym. It feels good. What about you?
Some. I want to do more. And it's, I think one of the things that's tricky for me is that I do, on any given day, I do 10,000 things that I enjoy that are good. So I'm not saying, oh, you know, I'm wasting time. I definitely don't waste time. Or, oh, I'm doing this shit that I hate. And it's a good problem to have, because it's like, okay, I'm working on this thing, which is a good thing. I'm doing this other thing that is a good thing. But there are 24 hours in a day, and so something got to give. So at some point, it's like prioritizing of, okay, if there are several things that you want to spend your time doing, make a choice.
Yeah.
You know, because at some point, otherwise, the 24 hours make a choice for you. And before you know it, you haven't done some of the stuff that
right.
really was a priority, because you did something else that was okay.
Right.
You can justify it, but it doesn't quite deliver the same results.
That's right.
And I think I really need to... It really boils down to just good, stupid, old-fashioned discipline of just getting up and saying, today, this gets done.
Yeah.
I don't care how, when you make it happen, one way or another. Yeah. That's it.
And it's great. And anytime you do that, whatever it is, it's just like instantly liberating. Mm-hmm. Like when you, whatever, like it really is just like so, it's just like the hardest part about writing, sitting down to write.
Oh yeah.
Writing itself is like not the easiest thing ever, but no. Like getting your ass in the seat is the hardest part about working out is getting to the gym.
Oh yeah.
The hardest part about meditating is getting to the meditation cushion. It's really not that difficult, you know, and it's just like, you know, doing it. And
I had once, I went to train, I was going to judo class. And I drove probably 20 minutes to get there. I get out of the car. I have my gi with me. I walk in. I took one look at the mat. I walk back. I got back in the car. I drove 20 minutes back. And I was just like, yeah, it's not happening.
You know what I call that? Victory. Because you fucking did it. Like just making the effort to try to do the thing. I think it's still victory, man. It's not the best victory ever, but it's still better than not. It's still better than sitting at home.
Sure, without knowing. There was a good victory the following week, because I basically do the same thing, right? I walk in, I sit down, and I'm just finding an excuse to not step up and walk away.
Yeah.
And it was somebody who saw me and they were like, hey, you want to jump in? And I'm like, I don't know. And he kind of stepped off the mat and he's like, are you depressed? And I'm like, and you know, I didn't think I was depressed, but when he asked me the question, I was like, I guess so, a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was so cool, because the guy said, like, you know what, I totally get it. I feel the same way a lot of the times. Just step on the mat with me. We'll just play for 5 minutes, okay? I'll just show you something. There are a couple of things I'm working on. We'll play those for 5 minutes. Then if you want to go, okay? And he's like, and I step on the mat, and we start playing, and of course I start feeling better, and everything starts clicking,
yes.
And then I get an awesome workout, and I feel better about life. And it was just like, oh, that was interesting.
That's a proficient teacher.
Yeah, that was awesome right there.
Yeah, that's kind of part of being a teacher, is like you get good at like analyzing your students where mm-hmm. they're at.
Right.
You want to come to them where they're at. And figure out a method for that place. He sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
That was Mr. Chris Hilset. Thank you very much. No, that was, he did exactly what I needed in that moment, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't even know I needed it. And he had that exact right reaction that wasn't like, oh, come on, just get in here and do it. It's like, yeah, fuck you, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
He wasn't just letting me. He was like, just a little gentle prodding, just enough to get you to take that first step your own. And it was...
He's one of them.
Yeah, it was great.
He's one of
awesome.
Them.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them out there. Like, it's not just Buddhists. Mm-hmm. It's like, obviously, it's like every religion, every industry, they're all out there, man. And like, they're really, really good. And what are they good at doing? They're good at helping us
mm-hmm.
be a little less stuck.
Yep.
They're just, they like, and it's like everyone's, you know, like if you think about a car stuck in mud. It's like it's universally kind of the same problem. The car's stuck in mud.
Yeah.
But the method to get each car out of the mud is going to vary from types of Absolutely. Mud to type of car to what tools you have on hand to get the car out of the mud. There's lots of different ways to do it. And it's really amazing when you realize, like, holy fuck, there are people in the world who have trained themselves or been trained to get cars out of mud.
Yep.
Only it's Warriors. Not cars, it's yeah. people who've gotten stuck. And they've gotten stuck and they want to be free. That's another part of, like, I think the skill set that these people seem to demonstrate is they can recognize the people who actually want to get out of the mud
right.
and the people who don't, who yeah. like being stuck in the mud. And the people who like being stuck in the mud, they're like, enjoy the mud.
And I think it's part of what's trippy about these phases, you know, the highs and lows of life that are inevitable, is sometimes when you are stuck in the low, you know you're stuck in the low. You know what it feels like to be in the high. And you know you have done it 10,000 times before, but exactly what you say, this time you don't know what it is that's going to make it go click and right. suddenly you're out.
Right.
And so you keep wandering and you turn around and you try this, try that. Like the last time, it was awesome. It's like after maybe 6 weeks of this, it wasn't terrible, wasn't bad, but it was, you know, mild depression where yeah. I'm carrying like 50 extra pounds on my shoulder kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And my daughter started talking to me because she saw, you know, I'm in a weird mood. I have been in a weird mood for a little bit and it's not dramatic, but visible enough. And I don't know what the fuck she said, but something that she said made me, I could almost hear the click in my brain where I felt something go clung, door opening. I'm suddenly looking at the exact same situation in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
I sat with it for a day or so and the next day I was done and I was out wow. and that whole phase was over. And I don't even remember what words she used, but that's the thing. It's like, it's not just a perfect methodology that always works every
no
time.
Way.
It's like, it has to be the right timing, the right tone, the right thing. That on a particular day can turn that key.
That's right. And there has to be a willingness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be an authentic desire. Because a lot of people, they don't... I think everybody naturally wants to be lighter.
Sure.
They want to be free. They want to It's kind of like, you know, you look... What's one of the saddest things to see... when you're taking a walk is sometimes you'll see people hanging on their porch, a canary in a cage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like that, I don't know, maybe the canary's never really flied or flown.
Yeah.
But the canary sees birds and knows this is possible.
Yeah.
And it's sad to me. And I think that like everybody deep, deep down knows that there's something. There is more than maybe what they're experiencing. There's a potential for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those people, it's way deep down and they don't want to fucking, they're doing it in their own time, in their own way. It's nobody's business and yeah. it's absolutely fine for them to be that way because they're in process and they need those gestational periods of like deep, absolute traumatic
yeah.
misery to get to the point of, and when they get to that point of, it's going to be that much more sweet because all the extra time they served in the yep. coal mine of their self, it's going to be that, and no one should get in the way of that. I think it's really not cool to get in the way of that. Let them do it on their own, in their own way, and respect
mm-hmm.
what they're going through, even if it's not palatable to you. It's not your job. But some people, man, they're ready.
Yep.
They're
they just
ready.
Need that push, that
yeah.
one thing that say that's the way out of the maze.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And those are the people who like, you know, some folks have gotten good at recognizing them and or you should be good at recognizing it in yourself. You're like, fuck, I'm ready for this. And then that's why they call this a practice, which is the reason if you're out of the depression, and I'm not recommending meditation for mm-hmm. anyone other than me. This helps me.
Sure.
But right now, if you're out of the depression, and you start doing like a little bit of mindfulness practice, what are you practicing for?
Mm-hmm.
You're practicing so that when you get back there again and you're all lost and you've gotten all foggy and you've forgotten about the whatever and you're lost, suddenly this thing will happen Where you? Oh, my breath. Oh, I'm gonna follow my breath for a second. Oh, wait, I'm back. Oh shit, I was gone. Whoa, I was gone for a fucking month. Holy shit, I was gone for 8 hours. I was completely gone. I was up in my head.
Sure.
I didn't want to be where I was at. I wanted something. I was lost. I was gone. And that, those moments of like coming back into this beautiful world when you've been off in your like simulated holographic jumbled, confused, swirly mess of memories or thinking about the future or worrying about the lump on your fucking head that you got to go to the doctor, all the things. Those moments of coming back into this become really sweet. It becomes really, really sweet when you start realizing, like, wait a minute, I keep coming back here. And that's fucking great, man. I had this dream. It was the coolest fucking dream. I was in some theater, big weird theater. And like, I look behind me and there's this dude sitting there that looked like the Dalai Lama, but he was kind of in disguise or something, but he's definitely a monk. I'm like, is that the fucking Dalai Lama? And then like, I guess this Buddhist stuff's been getting in my head or something. But then something starts demonstrating to me. He's like, hey, check this. Look what it feels like when you stop resisting as much as you've been resisting every single thing. I just want to show you, here's kind of what it would feel like if you just stopped resisting what came your way. If you stopped fighting against what's happening. And in the dream, for like, I don't know, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, it was like it's like the vest thing. It's like suddenly somebody just took off a 600-pound vest, and it was the sweetest, most liberating, free, incredible. And it wasn't like my external situation changed.
Yeah.
It was just like the stuff that was happening, I was just like in that instead of pushing it away. And that's a big relief for me, is to like stop fighting whatever the moment is, because that's an unwinnable war.
And a lot of it right now you're doing through meditation. How often do you do it? How long? Like, give me the basics of
your
meditative practice.
Oh my God. It's like, I just did this class with Nick Turn, and then it's like, I haven't done it in like a few days since then, and still I'm feeling the effects. Not that you're feeling the effects. So when I'm doing it, I am doing it now. Mm-hmm. I'm just not doing it well. And it's important to do it well. That's the other cool thing about this lineage, is it's a practicing lineage, yeah. Which means that it's like, this is not philosophical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like,
you do it. That's
yeah,
it. It's a practice.
You do it.
Right.
So yeah, when you're doing it, it's like five days a week, 20 minutes a day. You could do 10 if you don't want to do 20. Yeah,
come on. It's like, that's like the smallest possible investment one could make to one's well-being. It's not exactly a shitload of time.
No. Yeah. I mean, but it isn't. And it's that makes it that much more hilarious when you're not doing it.
Absolutely.
But then the other part of it is like, don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I get it completely. But still, we're talking about something that if you have any will whatsoever, you can do. You know, if you want it in any way, shape, or form, it's totally doable. It's not like, oh, you know what? You need to put 2 hours a day. It's like, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if I can find 2 hours in that kind of thing. You
yeah.
know, we're talking about relatively small time investment.
And you can, what'll happen, or for me, what's happened is like you start, because this thing has happened where you begin to, like he did this, like in the class, he did this crazy, like it was amazing, like, you know, this is all has all been worked out over 2,000 years, like how to do it and evolved. I hate using the term, but it really is a kind of technology.
Sure.
But you sort of like start out with just like following your breath, but then he does these really cool, there's other things that you can do with your awareness, right? So you can move your awareness from your breath to the visual field. Right. So now instead of following your breath, it's like your breath and the visual field, just like purely looking at like the visual field around you. And then like when the thinking happens, you thinking, and then you go back to like watching. But then what starts happening, or what happened for me, is you begin to experience this. If you're like me and you've taken LSD for your entire life, you begin to experience this thing that your mind returns as like, wait, this is exactly like LSD. I feel like I'm tripping.
Yeah.
And not tripping because you're hallucinating,
but
tripping in the sense that it feels as though your identity is beginning to sort of dissolve into this field of awareness. And that, I was talking to him about it, and he told me the name. There's a name for that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he brushed it off or anything. He's like, yeah, that's like you can get into that expansive space, but that's not
it.
That's
right.
Not what we're doing at this second. This is, let's go back. That's still your mind again being like, whoa, I'm spreading into infinity. Okay. Thinking. Now let's go back into that, the moment again. And so, but something about it, like, I don't know. It's really, it does sort of begin to unravel. It's basically like, it feels like you're wearing a straitjacket and somebody like pulled a thread on the straitjacket just enough.
Right.
So that you can start like wriggling a little bit, and it starts loosening. But yeah, five times a week, 20 minutes a day, follow your breath, find a class. I think taking a class is really smart with this stuff, probably, you know.
Speaking of meditative practices, you ever experienced much with the whole Wim Hof idea, the Wim Hof method?
The breathing and the freezing your ass off?
Yeah.
No, I've done like cold dips and really like it. And like, I think there's something that like you find within that kind of like discomfort that's pretty amazing. What about you? You've been
I haven't. No, I want to, because it sounds like kind of like, as far as meditative practice go, that's also an interesting one where you're playing with your breath. You're still doing that because ultimately that's where it all starts from. But you apply it in a slightly different. And I think it's like that's something that's interesting right there is the ability to. The basics are the same, you know, the goals are the same, but the ways to go about it, there's more than one way.
Absolutely.
You experiment and you try what works for you. Because, I know people that wouldn't be called dead sitting on a pillow, but like Wim Hof thing makes sense to them. And so, okay, then that's your thing.
Absolutely, it's so important to find it, too.
And I think that's the key is what works for one person or works for one person in one phase in their life may not be the same thing that worked for the next person or even for yourself in a different phase of your life. And so it's like, keep experimenting, you know, and things like these where the experiment is not, you know, do it for a week and you just spent, what, 100 minutes doing it, 5 days a week for a week. Smallest time investment ever. Is it doing anything for you? Yes, continue. Is it not doing anything for you? Okay, try another one. Try a different one.
I think the main thing is that if you're like me and you've heard people talk endlessly about there being some other experience of reality that doesn't seem to be as terrified and heavy and freaked out and angry and spooky, then you might have rolled your eyes at that and been extremely skeptical about that and thought that actually isn't. I actually was talking to someone the other day and like she's miserable right now. And all I could tell her is like, that is how you're feeling now. But it truly doesn't have to be like that.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to, like it. There is actually a way to live that doesn't have to be so rotten. And the way to get there's so many different paths. And in fact, it's a process.
Yeah.
So even to say there's a path that leads to this destination or that is ridiculous. But there is the potential for the lightening of your load. And, you know, however you do that is, to me, it's like that's part of the adventure. It's just the moment you decide. To me, what really gets me into this stuff more than ever is when I actually think more in terms of like, how is this going to help me help other people? And how is this going to help me? Because, you know, everybody listening to this has either gone through the death of a parent or will go through the death of a parent. Mm-hmm. And if not the death of a parent, you're going to go through the death of a friend.
Sure.
Or you're not just that, but like at some point you're going to come into the company of someone who is really needing you to be fully there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can help in this like incredible decentralized revolution that's you can train yourself up.
Yep.
And to me, that gets me more excited about it than anything, which is just realizing like, wait a minute, this really, fuck me.
Yeah.
You know, please fuck me. No, fuck me in the sense of like, that I can't, it's hard for me to get that excited about that. You know, it's hard for me to get that excited about that as much as like, wait, oh shit. Oh shit, like this is real. Like people mm-hmm. actually need our help in the yeah. world.
Big time.
I mean,
that's one of the things, like, because once you become aware of how much suffering you go through in life, then a lot of people just become asshole because it's like, oh, I've had it bad, so I'm just going to pass it on to everybody else.
Yeah.
But the ones who don't do that, then you become really understanding of where everybody comes from. Because it's like, man, I know all too well that feeling.
Yes.
And it sucks.
Yes.
And just because it's not me right now, well, this person doesn't need to be there. It's like, if there's a way that I can do something to help them out, why not?
That's it, dude. And it's like, especially like, this is one of the cool things about being an old dude. Balding, fucking old, getting these wrinkles, you know, like experiencing the pains of getting like an older body mm-hmm. and like feeling like all the that have happened to me. Yeah, it's like all that shit is just training.
Yep.
And this adds back to the imaginary story you can tell yourself, which is instead of thinking about your life as a some kind of accidental catastrophe, imagine that you've actually been being secretly trained by a super intelligence so that you can become an operative in this incredible thing that's happening. And so then you look, then the moment you just make that little shift and look back at like all the shit that happened to you, and realize like, oh God, I was fantasizing that a Shaolin monk would come and take me to a temple where I would like yeah. have to like throw toothpicks through steel. But it's like, oh no, brother, this is way bigger than that. A super intelligence wrapped around you in the form of your incarnation and produced a series of events in your life that have like made you who you are today and that you are going to use at some future point to transform somebody else, to help in some way, potentially to actually like stop a school shooting, to stop a nuclear war, maybe. We don't know collectively what could happen. Yeah. So this fantasy is so fun to play around with because it's like suddenly your life stops being this meaningless, never-ending spray of diarrhea out of the anus of some kind of dark, chaotic being, but actually becomes, you realize like, oh, this has been an organized, systematic training that has in some way or another given me tools that I'm going to need to use at some point.
And what happened was that because you right now listening to this podcast at one point got stuck and forgot all this and couldn't quite get out. And, you know, there have been a few efforts to try to wake you up, didn't quite work out. Right now, the call has arrived through the sweet lesbian rasp of Drunken Trust.
Wake up, man! Wake up! There's a revolution happening! We gotta get going! Daniele, thank you so much
for
being on my show and letting me be on yours.
Yeah, this is awesome. And especially because now, thanks to this, we have the wake-up call for everybody. Right now, there are probably thousands of people who suddenly their third eye just opened and they are like, I know Kung Fu. And now they are off in the universe trying to make the world a better place.
Hare Krishna. That was Daniele Bolelli, everybody. Make sure you listen to his podcasts, The Drunken Taoist and History on Fire. Thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. And thank you all for listening. I love you guys, and I will see you soon. Hare Krishna.